This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, I hate to say it, write down the date, one of the darkest days in American history. October 27th. It will go down in history. Of the darkest of days of the pandemic, the darkest day, October 27th. For the first time in 32 years, team in Los Angeles, the LA Dodgers, were the World Series champions. I tip my hat to them. Congratulations. But America, listen up. We'll get through this. It's been a tough year. There are brighter days ahead. And after nearly 12,000 days of living in solitude, we will get through this. It will be okay. And already, was in a mere 20 minutes after we reached the lowest point of the lowest points, the most irresponsible World Series champion ever, walking around with Justin Turner. Really an embarrassment. And this is why, as America, we need to do a better job. Wear your mask. Get tested if necessary. If you're positive, quarantine. Be respectful of others. But again, America, we will get through it. That's all I have to say. That's it. Congratulations.
Did you lose Dodgers. A bet?
No, I didn't lose a bet.
Did you lose a bet?
No.
Then why are you wearing a Dodger blue shirt this morning?
This would be a Duke blue, Wes, on ACC Network. Duke blue.
No, sometimes it's not.
Sometimes North Carolina wears this color.
No. It's not Duke blue. That is not Duke blue.
It's not?
That is Dodger blue, no, and you wore it to celebrate the Dodgers winning the World Series.
That is not true, Wes Durham. It's a good try. It's not true.
All right.
That's all I'm going to say.
Just wondering. Oh, wait. Ladies and gentlemen, Vin Scully, the legendary voice of American sports, Pac. Vin Scully. One of the greatest announcers in the history of our industry, by the way.
He is that. Fantastic.
Tweeting out the Dodgers. Now, Vin did all those other ones, by the way.
Right.
And tweets out congratulations to the Dodgers.
The Dodgers joined the 3-50 club last night. So congratulations. They were the best team in baseball this year. They were.
Okay.
They proved it. But they joined the 3-50 club last night. There's only a handful of teams that have won 3-50 years. They now join that club. So good for them.
Wow. So there's that.
Again, stop me if I say this all the time. If I say something that's wrong, please correct me because I'll be the first to apologize. Yeah. But I believe that they now have won 3 in the last 50 years. Good for them. Would you like to try to guess the other ones? You're into trivia. Would you like to guess the other ones?
3-50.
There's six other franchises that have won 3-50.
In Major League Baseball, that is? Yeah,
that's what we're talking about, isn't it? Yes.
Would the Mets be one of those?
No, they would not be one of those.
No. They've only won 2.
How about the other team in the
Boston?
City? Boston's won one, right?
Angels. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim?
No. No. Mm. Yankees, A's, Reds. Red Sox, Aaron Katzman's Cardinals, the guys last night, and America's team. That's it. There's 7.
The San Francisco Giants, of course.
That's right. That's
America's team being the Giants, yes. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
You got one right.
So there it is. All right, that's enough of that. All right. We have other things to get into, more important. But again, congratulations, Justin Turner.
We spent 4 totally more minutes on it than I thought we would.
Hey,
we spent 4 more minutes on it than I thought.
If you want me to spend 3 hours on it, I can. That'd be easy to fill 3 hours of that.
Okay.
Irresponsible.
All right. Let's get to more current topics while people continue to pepper you on Twitter this morning, letting you know the Dodgers won the World Series.
It's fine.
A lot of ACC fans, I noticed, are Dodger fans this morning.
Like three of them.
That's good, though.
Like, again, okay. One for every one they've won in the last 50 years. There's three of them.
All right. Here we go. News yesterday emanating from Clemson, South Carolina, where the nation's number one team gets ready to host Boston College at high noon on ABC this Saturday. The linebacker, James Skalski, who missed last Saturday's game against Syracuse, is going to miss several games now with a groin injury. Dabo Swinney said the team had expected the injury to be minor. A subsequent MRI on Monday revealed more significant damage. Swinney said the senior will need surgery. Skalski had 20 tackles and a half sack so far this season, but there's no doubt that's the emotional leader of the Tiger defense. Go along with the Ben Boulware, if you will, that type analogy. So James Skalski is out for several games. How many is several? We'll wait and see. But that's a definite loss for Clemson. They've got other players all highly recommended, as we say in this side of the show. But that is a guy who is he and Baylen Specter, clearly those two lead guys at linebacker.
Wes, when you go
Pack,
through,
that's one you gotta account for that one now.
Well, it's not just that one. I mean, go down their list. I wrote this down yesterday. This is just on the defensive side. Now we'll talk to Dabo tomorrow. But Skalski, you just mentioned. Jones, the other linebacker, kind of pulled a hammy late in that game, if you remember. You're going in for the pick six, and
right. He's
day-to-day, but, you know, he's still banged up. Tyler Davis had an ankle, didn't play last week. Big man in the middle, they need him. Jordan Williams, another talented defensive tackle, been banged up. Xavier Thomas starting to just finally kind of get back having snaps again. Justin Foster, haven't seen him play all year, was a big-time player you expected back. You got Kendricks, didn't play last week, who's been their top cornerback. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just on one side of the ball. That would be a pretty good starting lineup if you go through that list of six or seven or eight guys. So, again, everybody's banged up this time of the year, late October, but Clemson's going to have to tag into their depth perception in terms of what they have on the second and third team. Again, they play a lot of guys. There's no doubt about that. But as Dabo pointed out, the heart and soul of that defense is James Skalski. So, they'll have to do without for at least a couple weeks going into November. So that is a big blow for Clemson. There's no doubt.
All right. The second story coming out of Clemson yesterday is the one that got more national attention. Skalski's injury to me is more important to the current Clemson situation. But the bigger news nationally in college football is that Trevor Lawrence yesterday indicated that, we'll see. We will see. He's not closing the door on a return for his senior season at Tigertown. When asked about it, Lawrence basically said, hey, we'll see. Here's Trevor talking about his future.
We'll just have to see how things unfold. I think there's a lot of factors in that, but honestly, just really playing this year, putting everything I have into it, not really focusing on next year, whether, you know, I leave or stay, whatever. Obviously, I have the option to do either one. Kind of my mindset's been that I'm going to move on, but who knows? There's a lot of things that could happen. So just really focusing on this year, not trying to look ahead, not trying to worry about that. Obviously, I can't control it, and really just trusting that God has a plan for me no matter where that is, no matter where I go, whether that's across the country, whether that's close to home, where I stay another year, no matter what it is, you know, we'll work it out. So, I'm not sure. That's a tough one, but we'll see how it all unfolds.
Every New York Jet fan just threw up. Threw up.
Pretty much.
I mean, that's the answer to that question. Listen, he's got to do what he's got to do on that front. But that answer, I will say, is very different than what we heard 6 weeks ago. That is a very different answer. Because 6 weeks ago, it was point blank that, hey, this is going to be my last year. I'm going to graduate in December. I'm engaged. I love playing Clemson football. I love being my guys. I love the coaches. Love the, you know, all that stuff. But it was like, see you later. We get to spring. I got to concentrate on 21. And maybe that's the deal for the NFL draft for him anyhow. But that answer yesterday was a very different tone than what we heard when the season started. Now, where it goes, like I said, I got no idea. it'll all play it out. And I'm not really too worried about Trevor Lawrence. I think he's going to be just fine, regardless of what the fork in the road is for him. He's going to have success. But that certainly was a statement that grabbed some headlines yesterday, no question.
Yeah, and look, here's the deal. He's got an opportunity to – now, a lot of people – argue whether or not you can control a situation. If you're going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft, we have seen players control that situation and control it in a way that if they're willing to go through the 96 hours of it being a little messy, it can work out. Case in point, Eli Manning. Okay? It's happened before. The other scenario that also presents itself is he is focused clearly on what's going to happen with Clemson in 2020. The question can be and will be likely asked a lot more, but he just gave you the answer. And the answer, yeah, it changed. From what he said to Tom Rinaldi, Pack, you're right, 6 weeks ago, it has changed. But the idea that he can't control this situation, I disagree. I disagree totally. When you know you're the number one, and you're the consensus number one, and by all accounts, of all the people that project the NFL draft and do these other things, he's the number one pick next spring. If he is the number one pick next spring, you can control it. You can say, you can draft me, but I'm not coming back. I'm going back to school for the senior year. And as crazy as some people may think that will be to risk injury and everything else, remember one little codicil that is on the horizon, Pack. Remember that thing we spent some time this summer talking about?
Name, image, likeness.
Yep.
Well, Wes, like everything else in life, leverage is king. When you have it, you must use it. Any right. negotiation, any scenario you can come up with, when you have leverage, you use it. If you don't, it is yep. a complete, total, wasted opportunity. And that is business 101. Very seldom in your lifetime, you will have leverage. But when you get it, you're going to know almost immediately, man, they really can't do without me. When you have it, you use it. So that statement yesterday I thought was, whether that was planned or not, I have no earthly idea. But Trevor Lawrence has leverage. He has options, and he's going to have success if he decides to take what's behind door number one, number two, or number three. And so that's a good position to be in. And so if you're Trevor Lawrence, hey, you stay healthy, you do what you love to do, get your degree. He's going to get married, already has a national championship, trying to win another one. Maybe he wins the Heisman if things work out. Life's a pretty good spot if you're Trevor Lawrence. So good for him. If you got it, use it.
There you go.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
First, let's go to Chestnut Hill with a guy that, in my opinion, at the halfway point of the season, would be your ACC Coach of the Year. Jeff Affley joins us. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Mark. Good morning, Wes. I'm good. Thanks for having me on again.
Always a pleasure. You know, I got to be honest with you. Last weekend reminded me of old school BC football. I know you've been airing it out since you rolled into town, but seeing old Big 26 rumble and stumble and 264 yards on the ground, that was the old school BC football that I knew and loved right there. That had to be a welcome sight because you've been throwing the football great, but, man, you ran it really, really well Saturday.
Yeah, we did, and it was really good to see that. Had a little bit more balance, and, you know, it's kind of what I've seen the last few weeks and was hoping, you know, against Virginia Tech that would come out a little bit, but it takes a little time, you know, without a spring and without a real training camp. The run game is tough, and I think Coach Signetti and our offensive staff have done a really good job, and I see it in practice getting better and better, and it was really nice to see Saturday night. It was great for Bailey, great for our O-line, and if we can be more balanced like that, I think we'll throw the ball even better.
Hey, Coach, I want to spend a second on the offensive line because we all talked about the expectation with Lindstrom and Johnson and Vrabel and some of those other guys who had had some success in the previous regime here. But specifically Johnson's commitment to change spots here, go guard to tackle. What's that investment been like, and what did you and Coach Signetti see that said, okay, he might be better served playing tackle for us than guard, because Eric McClain said something with us a couple of weeks ago about when you go from guard to tackle, it's not like guard to center. You're out there kind of on that island a little bit. What has Zion done for you to show, number one, his teamwork, but also his willingness to make such a drastic change, I think?
Well, one, he's a captain, and he's one of our best leaders. And when we looked at it hard and really in training camp, right, because we really didn't have much of a spring, we saw how athletic he was. And then we looked at the O-line. We were banged up a little bit. So we tried to piece it together, and we tried to have some foresight and see, you know, where do these guys best fit? And we talked to Zion, and we saw how athletic and big, and, you know, he really was our best fit there at the time. And the work he's done with Coach Applebaum and Coach Cignetti, I mean, it shows. And I think it's only going to help him in the future. You know, you're talking about a guy who's going to play in the National Football League. He's got film as a tackle, as a guard. And then what we're doing offensively, you know, these guys got to learn how to pass protect. So when these NFL scouts turn on the film, I mean, we drop back and we throw the ball, which is kind of rare in college football to see some of the protections that we get into. So, one, it helps us as a team, and I certainly think it's going to help him in the future as well.
Coach, what did you learn about your team after the performance in Blacksburg? And I know a lot of folks are like, oh, I want to forget about it. Maybe just the exact opposite. You remember nights like that where, hey, we put the ball on the ground, we turned it over five times, we thought this game was going to be competitive. Next thing you know, it gets away from you. But, man, your team really responded to that. What did you learn about your guys?
A lot. And I appreciate you asking that question, because truthfully, that to me was going to be our biggest test. You know, this team, we're still trying to get confident. We're still trying to build our identity. And, you know, we go on TV Saturday night prime time and we don't play well. I mean, we turn the ball over five times and, you know, we get beat up pretty good by a good team. So how are we going to respond? Are the guys going to come out and feel sorry for themselves and not practice well? And are we going to let that beat us twice? And the cool part to see was it was just the opposite. I mean, we had our best week of practice. No one came in with a pouty face. No one pointed fingers. We just got back to work. And the way they came out fast and we went up so quickly on Georgia Tech, it's a credit to the team and the staff, just how much they're bought in and how much they believe in one another. And truthfully, that was my best moment of the year so far, just to see the bounce back and the resiliency.
All right, so they're building blocks in this process, right? And you have some off the field, on the field, practice, games, things like that. So does somehow or another pulling one from the fire against Texas State, learning from Blacksburg, does that now carry you over to where you've got some methodology that goes this week when you get number one on the road?
Well, I think all those games are so important, right? You go down to a Texas State team that everybody told our players all week that they should win, and they fight back and score 14 points in about a minute and 30 seconds. Then you go get beat up, and then you bounce back. You play against a North Carolina team that no one thought you could win, and you take them down to a two-point play. What I think you're starting to see with our team is it's not about the opponent. It's about the process of getting better every single day and giving all that we have and improving and having fun doing it with each other. And then, you know, feeling so confident because you know you put the work in, and going to Saturday and not worrying about the opponent or the score early in the game. Just go play football and let it rip and have fun. And then, you know what, in the fourth quarter, we'll see where we're at. And we've been in a lot of tight ones, and hopefully we'll have a chance to go win it.
All right, let's talk about this week's opponent. You saw this crew when you were at Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl game, which was truly a classic, and I don't want to put salt in the wound there, but you know these guys. You saw them last year. You studied them. You had plenty of time to study to get ready for that game. Now you're studying them again for this week, a road trip to Death Valley. When you do the eye test, Coach, in terms of what I saw at the Fiesta Bowl and versus what I'm going to see this week, what are the major differences that you see between 2019 Clemson and 2020 Clemson?
Yeah, a good question. And I saw plenty of them at the Fiesta Bowl. And unfortunately, when I closed my eyes at night for about 6 months, I had nightmares. So I saw them over and over again. So here they are again. What I see is an improved team. And I mean that. I think Trevor Lawrence right now, just watching him from last year and watching him this year, I think he's taken a huge leap. And I know that's hard to say. And that's not coach talk because we're playing him this week. I've been around, coached against a lot of good quarterbacks. I mean, probably everyone in the National Football League who's played the last 8 years. This kid is playing better in the pocket. He sees things better. He's keeping things alive, but he's sitting in there and going throughout all of his reads. He's got such a live body. You know, he's still running big and fast, but he's making such good throws. The kid's exceptional, and I don't know if there's a better college football player in the country right now. You know, the running back, obviously, ETN, I was introduced to him last year pretty quickly at the Fiesta Bowl. Again, I think he's one of the best players in college football. I think they're a better team offensively, and I say that because I'm a defensive guy, and I've been studying their offense more than their defense at this point of the week. And I think they're really well coached. This isn't a team that, oh, they're so talented, but you don't talk about their coaching staff. I mean, Coach Elliott and those guys, they do such a nice job of putting their playmakers in position. I think it's a better, improved football team, and I know that's hard to say.
The ETN comparison, the Lawrence-ETN combination, we touched on this a couple weeks ago. It's scary when you look at their totality as a duo, isn't it? I mean, just how impactful they are. It really draws you into, like, some of the great duos in college football history. Is there a singular thing about them that concerns you the most on Saturday?
The thing that scares you the most is it's not like you're just playing a guy who can sit back and throw the ball in the pocket or a running back who can just run it out of the backfield. Mm. I mean, obviously, Trevor, he can run the ball, too. I mean, I learned that the hard way last year. And ETN can catch the ball out of the backfield. I mean, some of these screen passes and these catch and runs that he has, I mean, it's hard to defend. I mean, you're talking about two generational players, in my opinion, on the same football team. And then how hard they work and how hard they play. I mean, you got to give them credit, too. They're both really tough guys. I mean, Trevor takes some shots. I mean, I saw it last year. And he bounces back, and the way ETN runs, too. I mean, you better bring your big shoulder pads to this game because this kid's not going down easy.
By the way, speaking of improved quarterbacks, Djurkovic, he arrives on the scene. You get noticed late. Now all of a sudden we got, you know, the BC air raid going on up there at Chestnut Hill. How have you seen your quarterback improve from week one to what you saw last week?
Well, I don't think we're air raid. Come on, we just ran the ball for 200.
No, wait a minute. Hey, Halfley.
We're ground and pound.
Hey, no disrespect.
We're all ground and pound now. We're not throwing anymore.
Yeah, okay, right. Let me tell you something. After years of Steve Adazio, I was waiting for, hey, we're going to let Bailey and all these boys touch it 73 times and throw two forward passes. Now, all of a sudden, I watch a BC game. It lasts 4 hours. Poor West Durham can't get out of town because you guys are throwing it 65 times a game. But your quarterback... Yeah, but brag about your quarterback a second, because, man, he has really, really been good.
Yeah, he is. From the last time I talked to you, I think the improvement's been drastic. The way he commands the huddle. Mm. Sometimes I just sit back there and just his cadence and telling guys when the shift in motion and how he sees things. The ball's coming out so much quicker. He looks so much more comfortable in the pocket. And then, obviously, there's plays where, you know, a guy's about to sack him. He stiff arms him and throws the ball 40 yards down the field on a straight line. And just has the ability to make so many big plays. The scary part is last week he ran for 100 yards on design quarterback runs. So while he doesn't look fast, he is fast. And he's big and he's hard to tackle. Mm-hmm. I just think the sky's the limit for this kid. And it's still so early. I mean, he's barely played in our system. So, again, a credit to our offensive staff, Coach Signetti, and a credit to Phil. I mean, I'm just so happy for the kid from where he's come, not playing football for 2 years. You know, he's got confidence. He loves playing ball again. He loves his teammates. It's just awesome to see.
Mm-hmm. All right, so here's Saturday's script, right? You're going to play the number one team. Boston College, in its history, has been here in football and in basketball to be the kind of David to the Goliath, if you will, on the road, that kind of thing. Is there anything in particular about Saturday's game that is a must for your team?
Yeah, we have to play clean. And that's just what I keep talking about. We have to take care of the football and we have to execute. We can't have sloppy penalties. We can't have undisciplined penalties. If we go backward at all, it's not going to look very good. We got to control the ball, hold on to the ball. We got to attack the football and try to take it away. I want to play a clean, solid, confident game. That's what I'm most looking forward to. And that's what I keep talking to these guys about.
Hey, by the way, have you seen that O'Rourke McFadden old school helmet, the little throwback action, no face mask? I mean, you know what it's all about now, unless you're the head coach at BC.
I do. Jason Baum made me very aware of it. So I've seen the helmet. I know what it looks like, and it was pretty cool to hear. That was Coach Sweeney's first win. I didn't know that because he's got about 2,000 wins, so that was definitely interesting to hear that his first one was against Boston College.
You know, I tell you what, Coach. If you upset number one, I could see you driving around Chestnut Hill with that bad boy, right? You go get a convertible and drive around wearing that thing, wouldn't you?
I might just strap it to my body and not take it off.
Hey, that's pretty good. Let me real quick. A few weeks ago we ran some video of your team winning a game on a field goal, and it was noticed that PR extraordinaire Jason Baum was below the goalpost celebrating. Has there been some sort of word of instruction about his actions and pending discipline for, you know, overtly cheering?
You saw the fist pump, right? He did underneath the goalpost. Yeah, you know, I was fired up for him, man. I want him to cut it loose too. We loosened him up a little bit, and he's playing and coaching with a little more confidence too this year.
That's good coaching. And by the way, one other thing before we let you go, the dogs appreciated the gift. We finally got that arrival about 10 days ago, so I wanted to personally thank you for that. And the hounds give you a double paws up for all the treats coming their way. Appreciate that.
And no problem. We'll make sure Coach York and I keep sending stuff your way.
You got it. Always appreciative. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Jeff. Good luck on Saturday.
Mark. Thanks, Wes. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me on. It's always fun.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. Jeff Hafley, head football coach at Boston College, with us here on Packer and Durham. Plenty more to go. And sneaky ball game Saturday, Mark. Sneaky ball game.
This is one of those deals, I think, if you're both Clemson and Notre Dame, right? All the talk, November 7, November 7, November 7. Well, guess what? It's Halloween on Saturday. Both of those teams, you know, Georgia Tech's waiting for Notre Dame in Atlanta. Clemson's got BC this weekend in the Valley. You can't get to November 7th unless you take care of business on Halloween. And I just went through a litany of the defensive bruises the Clemson defense has. And granted, they got a bunch of good players, but they are really kind of banged up on that side. So here comes Jeff Hafley's guys. They're feeling good with their offense. They can throw it. They can run it. It'll be a physical game. There's no question about that. So I suspect that Clemson's effort Saturday better be better than it was against Syracuse, or that could get extremely interesting. I don't want to hear about what the line is and all that kind of stuff. You got to come ready to play, because when you're sitting there in this position that both Clemson and Notre Dame are in, you're going to catch everybody's best shot. And, you know, if we get to November 7th and they're both undefeated, so be it. But there's still work to do on both sides.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Perplexing. Cool league. Louisville. Don't know them. Never seen them. Sounds just like them.
All right.
Sounds just like Justin Fuente.
Yeah. Well, apparently, I actually didn't think it would take this long, but now word has gotten back to the head football coach of the Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University about the impression that you do of him on the show. And Monday night during Tech Talk Live, the radio show each week with Coach Fuente and the voice of the Hokies, John Lazor, and the Hall of Famer, Mike Burnup, in the segment aptly titled Fun with Foo, the question of your impression was presented to Coach Fuente.
I've had a number of people that wanted me to ask you this week, so I'm going to. Have you seen Mark Packer's impression of you? And if so, your thoughts?
Yeah, I've seen it. So I have mixed emotions about it. Okay? Like, first of all, I'm honored. Okay, like, I'm honored that somebody tried to do an impression of me. Second of all, I mean, obviously he was taking a shot at me because he was, you know, like, it was coach speak, right? Because I wouldn't tell him anything about the quarterback or whatever, you know, which nobody should be surprised about anyway. So I get that part of it. And then third of all, like, I don't know, like, is he going in on, like, was that a shot or was it like a backhanded compliment or like when he starts talking about ripping the podium apart? Like, what did he really mean there? Like, I'm still trying to figure that part of it out. So.
I think it came from a place of love because he said, I love Justin Fuente.
All those guys are fantastic. I tell you what. And, you know, I mean, I make bones about it. Like, I mean, I have my feelings about various media outlets, but Not that. I have strong positive feelings about that one. Those guys are fantastic. They're funny. They're smart. They're in it for the right reasons, in my opinion. You know, they are genuinely supporting, excuse me, ACC football, the ACC football teams, and I think they're great in this region. And I know they're wildly popular, and I wholeheartedly endorse them. I think they're fantastic.
So I would just say a couple things here. Number one, it was not a shot, because if Coach knew, I'm married to a Hokie. Right? I'm married to a Hokie.
Yeah, there you go.
And Amy Packer right. has always said, hey, when's Coach coming on? I said, I don't know. Yeah, when he's on, I'll let you know. So I would never, ever do anything towards Justin Fuente or any other Hokie, because I'm married to one. I outkicked my coverage. And if you don't believe me, you're out of your mind. So that would be number one. There's no shot taken at Justin Fuente. But I will tell you, he will rip apart that podium. And again, it's all in good fun. And I wasn't taking a shot either at the quarterback. If you have watched or listened to this show, you know, if I were a coach, I wouldn't tell the media anything. So I fall right under the Justin Fuente deal that, hey, you ask me any question you want, I don't want to give you any answers. So there's no shots taken there at all. But I just thoroughly enjoy watching Foo every week. And every Tuesday when we do conference cuts, my favorite conference cut is with Justin Fuente. I think he is the most entertaining. I get more out of watching him and listening to him than I do anybody else in the league. He's my favorite when it comes to conference cuts. So we're all on the same team, but I appreciate those kind words. I think those were kind words.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Very nice. I'm just glad to know he kind of likes it. Although I've never been told we're wildly popular. I appreciate that endorsement too.
Wes. Wildly popular.
Popular.
Louisville.
Perplexing though, isn't it? It's perplexing.
Perplexing. Yeah. Yeah.
So there you go.
Fun with food. Oh, love it.
Unbelievable. Hokies, by the way, game two of our ACC triple header in Derby City to meet Louisville for the first time since 2006 and as members of the ACC. So we're looking forward to that. Roddy Jones, Eric Wood, and I will be there for you on Saturday about 4 o'clock Eastern time, following Syracuse and Wake Forest and ahead of North Carolina's visit to Virginia, which is our ACC Network primetime game presented by GEICO. Thank you to the good folks at Learfield IMG College, John Laser and such, for providing the audio.
Now we just got to get Coach on.
Foo.
Now we just got to get Coach on. I will interview,
yeah,
I will interview the Coach doing Coach.
Oh, no. No. No.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Here we go. Quarterback. I don't know.
Perplexing.
Quarterback.
Quarterbacks,
who's your quarterback, Coach?
You know, we got three, maybe four, and,
Let me ask you this. Pantheon of Packer impressions... In the pantheon of Packer impressions, Justin Fuente, Danny Ford, Frank Howard.
Oh, you're in the sweet spot. Ford is a classic.
I was asked about the Coach Howard impression. I was asked about the Coach Howard impression no less than 5 times Saturday.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Well,
the Coach Howard impression is building major momentum.
Well, our youngins are going to go play your youngins. And you come on over. You tell Fuente not to feel sorry for that sorry impersonation that Packer boy trying to do of him. We go down there and go to the basement. He may never make it out alive. Coach Hyde, young people. Then Danny, people, youngster people.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we need to get Justin Fuente on the show, though. That'd be hilarious. That'd be great.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday.
What are we doing?
Jeff Hafley, always appreciate his time. BC goes to Death Valley this weekend. Take on number one. All right, we got conference cuts. And my understanding, just as a little tease for this show, is that you know how much I love Tuesday conference cuts because my man Justin Fuente comes on here and we do our little...
Yes.
My understanding is that we have a response from the head football coach at Virginia Tech regarding the impersonation. And that's coming up here in about 15 minutes. All right? So stay tuned.
Less.
Or less. So stay tuned. Yeah. It's coming your way.
We don't have a response from the conference about you driving the golf cart at the cross country championships, but apparently we have a response from the head coach of Virginia Tech.
Yeah, so you'll hear from Foo coming up here in about 10 minutes, and the golf cart, we'll take it up with the commissioner at 9, but I told you, if I didn't hear anything yesterday by 10 a.m., I'm out because I got to go take another one of those COVID tests on Friday. So I'd rather be in the golf cart. They don't want a part of it. I get it. We move on. So now we got COVID tests instead. Okay. So we'll address that with the commissioner at 9 o'clock, amongst other things, more important things.
All right. Let's get to the cuts. Wednesday edition. And we start with the head coach of the Clemson Tigers talking about the intensity of Brent Venables' kids who play for his football team.
T-Bone's probably wired a little more like Brent. And Jake's maybe you know, Jake's a little more reserved. And then, you know, but he's a grinder like his dad, but he's reserved. And then he's relentless on the field. But, you know, T-Bone is probably a little more like Brent in that, you know, he's like the Tasmanian everywhere he goes. You know, he he's just flying around everywhere all the time. But they're two great kids, man. Just great kids. Very different, but both similar when it comes to their love of preparation, their commitment to grinding to be great, their love of playing the game and their toughness.
And they're going to get plenty of playing time given how beat up the Tigers are on the defensive side.
Yep. Jake started last week in the middle for Skalski, so there you go with Baylen Specter. Got to tell you, Dabo with glasses. I'm okay. I vote up. I'm thumbs up on Dabo with glasses, Pack.
I'm sure he's happy about that. I mean, what would be – well, if you said thumbs down, what would have been the deal there?
I don't know. I mean, if the big, heavy black frame glasses or whatever. All right. Next up, Dabo also talked about what you just mentioned with Coach Hafley, the what's at stake on Saturday? The O'Rourke McFadden Trophy.
Yeah.
It goes to the winner of the Clemson BC game.
You know, growing up in Alabama and spending most of my life there, I didn't know a lot about BC until obviously I knew Doug Flutie and all that, but until they came into the league. It's a pretty unique tradition. And then for me, BC is always going to be a special game because that was my first ever win. That was my first ever win, my first ever trophy, I guess, if you will. I think, you know, I think Spiller was the leather helmet winner. It's one that's got even more special meaning to me, for sure. But there's great traditions. Great respect from both fan bases, and always fun to compete against those guys.
Guarantee if I won that MVP award, I'd put that leather helmet on. I'd wear that thing all around town. I would. Those old leather helmets are awesome. Love those old school leather helmets.
How about Jeff Hafley just said he'd strap the trophy to his body?
Yeah, Hafley's got it figured out now. He gets it. Halfly understanding. Dabo obviously gets it. He said first time he ever won a game is against BC. But that is a cool helmet now. If you've not seen it, we'll get a picture before the week's up. It's cool. I love it. That thing would be a good Halloween gift there. Just saying.
We're hearkening back to the great quote of Lefty Driesell after he won the ACC tournament. I'm going to put that trophy on the hood of my car and drive it all over North Carolina.
They can all see it. He did say it. So
they
true.
They can all have a look at it.
Yep.
All right. Let's go to Atlanta. Jeff Collins has Notre Dame Saturday afternoon at Grant Field at 3:30, but he's also going uniforms again. Black watch on Saturday.
I was a young guy, middle school, aged, and I still remember, I can vividly see it on my wall in my bedroom out in Conyers, Georgia. I had a black watch poster hanging over my bed. A swarm of Georgia Tech Yellow Jacket defenders swarming after the ball, wearing those black jerseys, that black GT and the black stripe and the black face mask. I can vividly picture that on my wall. And have always dreamed of one day being here, one day being a part of something that's special, continues to grow in that way. So I know exactly what this program is supposed to look like. I know exactly what this program will look like. Excited for our guys to be able to put that uniform of, you know, one of the best defenses and even teams that have played here.
Well, I want to tell you now, when you go to put this on, this harkens back, 1985, if you will, maybe early 80s, Bill Curry and the Ray-Ban glasses pack, Ted Roof, Pat Swilling, Cleve Pounds. This is the Black Watch. Bill Curry hatched it, and, man, it had momentum now for a defense in the early 1980s at Georgia Tech, and the Adidas replicas look sharp. That'll be a good look on Saturday when Notre Dame rolls into Grant Field.
Some schools will give you the black alternative jerseys, and they just don't work. I mean, just because you're wearing black doesn't mean it's an automatic good look. This will be an automatic good look. We've seen it before, and I love that they're bringing it back. And one other thing I would add, just watching Jeff Collins' press conference, I couldn't help but notice the BMW logo in the backdrop. And it influenced me so much that we went and bought one yesterday, Wes. Mrs. P got an upgrade yesterday. Opportunity. Hopefully the ESPN sales department's paying attention this morning. We are going to have a Beamer in the driveway. Compliments of the Jeff Collins backdrop yesterday. So Mrs. P getting a major, and let me emphasize, major upgrade on that perspective.
Major upgrade.
Nice.
Yeah, good for her. She's well-deserving of it.
Oh, no doubt. Day. Has earned every penny, Lane Kiffin.
Every penny. That's right. Yeah. Let's finish this section of conference cuts. We go to Winston-Salem. Dave Clawson puts the Deacons on the road for the first time, and I mean the real road, like an airplane and everything. He talks about just doing that this year.
I mean, this is the first time the whole year that we've left the state of North Carolina, and we're only going to do it twice the whole season. So, you know, we're just going to be very precautious. We're going to, you know, have our mask, and we're going to have our PPE equipment, and you know, we're going to go up there in New York State right now. Once we get to the hotel, you know, I've just been informed I can't even go out and go for a walk. We have to quarantine inside the hotel. So I, you know, usually like to get up in the morning and go for my morning run before a game. And I just got told a half an hour ago I can't do that. So you know, I got to figure something out because, you know, I don't want to get up and not be able to do anything before the game.
We kidded around with Dave Clawson yesterday on the show that after the last 2 weeks beating Virginia and Virginia Tech, he's going to have a hard time going north of the border since he owns the Commonwealth. And now all of a sudden he's going to go up to New York. He can't even leave the hotel. And tough week for Dave Clawson. The good news is they're playing good football.
Yeah, if you see somebody jogging around the banquet rooms Saturday morning before the game, you know who it is, right?
The Packer and Durham Podcast.